have a child who has been diagnosed with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder? What kind of treatment is working or not working? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Doctors are diagnosing more children with ADHD. Now, an estimated 1 in 10 children has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Our guest this hour is a psychologist who argues cultural changes contribute to a rise in the ADHD numbers, and he warns against putting every child diagnosed on prescription drugs. We will welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest thinks the condition is overdiagnosed and children are being overmedicated. He said so in his first book 20 years ago. And he says so again in a revised and updated edition of The Myth of the ADHD Child. Our guest is Thomas Armstrong, a psychologist. He is the executive director of the American Institute for Learning and Human Development. His book is The Myth of the ADHD Child, 101 Ways to Improve Your Child's Behavior and Attention Span Without Drugs, Labels, or Coercion. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what do you mean when you say the ADHD child is a myth?
Well, I'm certainly not saying that there aren't any symptoms. The symptoms are very real. The hyperactivity, the inattentiveness, the impulsivity, those are all very real and all very frustrating for many parents and teachers. What I'm saying is that it's a story. I'm using the word myth in the original meaning, the Greek word mythos, which means story. And it's just not a very good story. The prevalence statistics for it vary wildly. In Europe, they think 2 to 4% of kids are ADHD. Here, it's 11%. Some states go up to 18%. Other states are as low as 4 or 5%. And it just troubles me that people have sort of used this model as a way of describing a whole variety of different types of kids. And I think that we have to understand that it's not simply a biological disorder, that it has been given a lot of weight and a lot of extra oomph by being associated with societal pressures. We don't let boys act like boys anymore, you know, to get involved in rough and tumble play. We don't let kids be kids anymore. We are turning our preschools and our kindergartens into these worksheet wastelands. Yeah. And I feel that, you know, we just are trying to put expectations on kids and not letting them play, for example. One of the 101 strategies that I recommend is letting kids play, just like kids used to do, instead of spending all their time in front of media. I think the media surge in the last 2-3 decades has been also a big part of the social feeding of this ADHD diagnosis, because kids are getting conditioned, their brains are becoming conditioned to short attention span type rewards, you know, getting the text message, getting the little beep, getting the like on Facebook and so forth. It's all very short kind of bits. And the reward centers of the brain are related to dopamine, the neurotransmitter. And in fact, the ADHD experts say that dopamine is the chief neurotransmitter that is problematic in ADHD. Well, I'd say that we are getting rewired through dopamine hits, basically, from the media, and that's another part of the puzzle.
Yeah. Here's a comment from one of our listeners, Kristen, on Facebook. And she writes, I have ADHD. 2 of my children have it. It is real and cannot be corrected with behavioral therapy, diet, or more exercise. This guest is dangerous and perpetuating myths about a real mental disorder. What is your response to that?
Well, Again, I'm saying that the symptoms are very real. I'm also not against medication. Medication can make a big difference in the lives of kids if it's used as a last resort instead of the first thing that you think of. You know, I really take umbrage at being described as a dangerous guest when I'm simply proposing another point of view. I think people get a little too attached to their labels when, in fact, I'm not attacking them. I'm not saying, you know, what you have is totally a myth. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying, why don't you look at, you know, all the issues that you struggle with and look at them in terms of not just a biological model, but look in terms of, okay, exercise didn't work, play didn't work. I've got 101 strategies for you to go through until you find something that works. And in the meantime, you can use medication in conjunction with any or all of these different strategies. But the problem is the ADHD experts put medication as the first line treatment. And medication is not to be entered into lightly. Medication has side effects like insomnia, irritability, nausea. It has serious rarer side effects like cardiovascular problems, bone density loss. And in one longitudinal study that just looked at decades of research, they indicated that it stunts growth by 2 inches and is not effective in the long run. So, you know, I understand the frustration of people who see me coming along saying, oh, you know, it's just a myth, and like I'm flying in the face of their real, very real experiences. And I want to suggest that I've thought this through very carefully. I've been thinking about it for 40 years now. I've got a paper I wrote 40 years ago before it was even called ADHD. And the problem is it gets the label gets in the way of our understanding the unique person and the unique constellation of treatments that they need and the variety of alternatives that are out there to be used.
Chuck on Facebook, on the other hand, says, I have great concern over the overprescription for stimulants used to treat ADHD. I think it might be the next opioid crisis, as I have seen many former or current meth users were either on ADHD meds. I guess we're on that earlier. Either way, I believe it is way overdiagnosed.
Yes, I agree. I mean, it's a huge business. It's going to be a $22 billion business by 2024. And just, you know, doling out the prescriptions, I think one of the studies I looked at examined what physicians, how much effort physicians put in making the diagnosis. And for many, it's a 15-minute interview. And boom, the diagnosis happens and the medication is prescribed. That's far too quickly. You know, medications, again, are in some cases very, very positive for kids if they are, you know, used by a physician who monitors their use closely, who looks for side effects, who changes dosages or changes medications if undesirable things happen. But there's so many other strategies out there that mm-hmm. are non-drug that don't have all of these side effects that we should be looking at instead of this ADHD promoting. In fact, a lot of the people who promote ADHD are in the pay of or have been in the pay of the drug companies. Some of the people who do research on ADHD have been in the pay of the drug companies and not at first divulge their financial connections.
Yeah, we have just a minute or so before a news break. Maybe besides the promotion from the drug companies, why do you think doctors are so quick to diagnose a child with ADHD and prescribe?
Well, I think doctors are under a lot of pressure. The drug industry underwent a huge change with a federal law that said we could, drug companies could now advertise direct to the consumer. So the consumer's getting these ads saying, you know, your life is going to be heaven with this medication, your child will have friends again, et cetera, et cetera. So they go to the doctor and they argue. They're arguing for the prescription, and the doctor has a huge backload of cases, and he doesn't have a lot of time, and managed care is at his throat, you know, wanting things to be quick and cost-effective, and medication fills the bill as far as that's concerned. So it's just, you know, the times that we're in are stacking the deck against our children. We're using these strong psychoactive medications on the most vulnerable members of our society. And, you know, we've got to be conscious. We've got to be careful. We should be asking questions. And that's what I'm doing.
We will ask more questions and take more of your questions at 1-800-642-1234 after we check news. Our guest is Thomas Armstrong, author of The Myth of the ADHD Child. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. When our guest first wrote his book, The Myth of the ADD Child, 20 years ago, he thought that the condition, now called ADHD, was being overdiagnosed, and children who had attention problems were being over-medicated. And he still thinks that. He's been researching this, as he says, for more than 40 years now. His new book is a revised and updated edition, The Myth of the ADHD Child, 101 Ways to Improve Your Child's Attention Span Without Drugs, Labels, or Coercion. Our guest is psychologist Thomas Armstrong. We're talking with him about what he sees as the problematic history of the diagnosis, and we will get into his recommendations for drug-free, label-free solutions for children who are struggling with attention span and other behaviors. We are welcoming your questions for him. We're welcoming your own experiences. Do you have a child with ADHD? What advice do people offer you? Is it helpful, or do they not understand what ADHD looks like in your life? How has your family tried to cope with ADHD? Are prescriptions working for you, or have you tried something else? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So let's talk a little bit about a little bit more. You touched on it in the beginning. How is it that you see our changing culture as a catalyst for a higher prevalence of ADHD?
Well, we live in a short attention span culture now. In my book, I look at what the media was like in the 1950s. In fact, I even suggested that people look at a couple of reruns of I Love Lucy, and The Honeymooners, even better, where they keep the camera on a scene for like 11 minutes and compare it with like an infomercial or a movie trailer today that has scenes flying by and, you know, a fraction of a second. And in fact, they've got a term for this in advertising and media studies called jolts per second. And, you know, a jolt is like a sound, a loud sound, or a shift in the camera, or some sort of an emotional expression. And advertisers and programmers use this to get our attention. They're basically trying to get the fight or flight brain, the part of our brain that evolved to get away from tigers, you know, and those sorts of things. They're using that brain to get our attention. And however, there's no tiger there. There's just, you know, this rather trivial information for the most part. And our kids are getting wired to that. And so it's natural that we should have, in a sense, it's natural we should have an attention deficit disorder disease of our society. But, you know, the problem with the ADHD experts is they keep on harping that it's a biological disorder. It's a biological disorder. Medication is the first-line treatment, and they spew out all this propaganda, what you do for an ADHD person, et cetera, et cetera. And it really takes us away from who that person really is. A lot of these kids are creative. That's another, I think, problem, is that we focus so much attention on pathology and disability in our society. There's a whole another aspect to my work that relates to neurodiversity, the idea that we should be using a diversity paradigm to look at kids who think, behave, and act differently than other people. You know, we don't say that a Calla Lily has pedal deficit disorder, do we? You know, we appreciate that it is what it is. And a lot of our kids who have the ADHD diagnosis, yes, they are different. They do attend differently. They do process information differently. But is that a disorder? You know, they get bored more easily, for example, and they need more novelty. You know, they're novelty seekers. Well, novelty seeking is one aspect of creativity. And I think that, you know, if somebody has a trouble getting bored, instead of saying, you have a disorder, we should be saying, well, how can we make the environment more stimulating for you?
Yeah.
So
let's say that this a child who, you know, is creative and seeks novelty is, you know, not paying attention to the teacher, not learning in the classroom, maybe, I don't know, throwing paper airplanes all over and disrupting the classroom. Maybe even behavior that's disruptive.
Right.
How is that going to? It's affecting other kids in the classroom.
Sure.
It's affecting that child, that individual's education. What do you do about that?
Well, we ask, why are they doing it in the first place? And the reason they're doing it in the first place is to give themselves stimulation. There's a theory of optimal stimulation saying that kids diagnosed with ADHD have higher need for higher levels of stimulation. And so, you know, regardless of whether that's biological or due to the media, we should understand that that's what the situation is. So how do we create a more stimulating learning environment?
Yeah.
That's another cultural dimension, in that our schools have become more and more over the last three decades focused on lecture, worksheet, textbook, standardized testing, accountability, and kids with the ADHD diagnosis don't do well in that environment. But if they are given active learning strategies, even as simple as having a spirited discussion, doing some writing, or engaged in some other way, they become indistinguishable from typically developing kids when looked at by a group of observers who don't know who's ADHD and who's not. So, you know, if that little amount of engagement can work, why not even go further and use role play and use project-based learning? We know that those are the strategies that are best for all kids. So in a sense, these kids with an ADHD diagnosis are like the canaries in the coal mine. You know, the coal miners kept the canaries down there in case there was not enough oxygen. The canaries would fall off their perch, and that would warn the coal miners to get back, you know, up to street level. And that's what our kids with ADHD are. They're warning signs saying there's not enough air in the culture for all of us, and we should heed the warning. And at the same time, we should be giving these kids pedagogical Ritalin, you know, pedagogical Adderall. In other words, a more stimulating learning environment. There's a ADHD researcher at Purdue University named Sidney Zental, who's done decades worth of research showing how using stimulation in the right ways educationally will make a huge difference in these kids' lives.
Our guest is Thomas Armstrong. He is author of the revised and updated edition of The Myth of the ADHD Child, 101 Ways to Improve Your Child's Behavior and Attention Span Without Drugs, Labels, or Coercion. 1-800-642-1234 is our number. If you have a question for him, or if you have an experience you'd like to share, do you agree with him that ADHD is overdiagnosed and that too often medications, prescriptions are the only answer? He is suggesting that is the case, and has some other ways to treat a child with attention span issues that are drug-free and label-free, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our lines are full now, so let's go to the phones. Michael in Spencer is with us. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Hi,
what
Michael.
What is your story?
Well, my son has been diagnosed with a lot of problems, and I don't know how to cope with it, you know? I mean, growing up, I did what I was supposed to do, and I went on, you know? But these kids nowadays, I don't know how to cope with it. And his doctor is diagnosing him with ADD, ADHD, anxiety, high anxiety, depression. I don't know how to cope with it.
Yeah, it's really hard on you, Michael, and as well. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, Thomas, in terms of these children. A lot of these children have a lot of things going on, and it's parents are at wit's end.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, you know, in your case, Michael, I would work closely with your physician, especially since he mentioned depression. And depression is another reason why kids can have difficulty concentrating and, you know, why they act out in many different ways. And depression is, in my estimation, a very serious disorder that does require, in most cases, some form of psychoactive medication. And the earlier you can treat the depression, the better you can keep future depressive episodes from happening. Same thing with anxiety disorders. Of course, anxiety disorder is a reaction to stress in the environment, and kids who with the ADHD diagnosis are more susceptible to stress. So in my book, I've got a lot of stress reduction strategies, including mindfulness meditation and yoga and exercise and finding a sport that the kid will like. And, you know, I see with, you know, many diagnoses, this is particularly important for you. I'm assuming that what the problem is are the behaviors that are going on and not the fact that the doctor is pummeling you with various disorder, you know, descriptions. That can be also overwhelming for a parent to come into a physician and then have them say, well, your child has this and this and this and this, and that can be overwhelming in and of itself. Although for some parents, I think the ADHD label is reassuring to them because they have been at their wit's end trying to figure out how to help this child, and, you know, their relatives are saying your kid is unmotivated or he's not like your Aunt Susie's daughter and that kind of thing, and so there's a lot of strain. So when you hear a physician say your child has ADHD, you can say, oh, my God, finally we know what it is. We can do something about it. So I want to emphasize that there is that value in the label, while at the same time the downside of that is the label starts to have a life of its own and we get distanced from the actual needs and interests of the child. You know, one of the first things that I asked parents in a situation like yours, Michael, is what are your child's strengths? What are the things that they love to do, that they're passionate about? Are they getting an opportunity to do those things? How do they change when they're doing things that they're strong at versus things that they're having difficulty with and so forth? And out of this, you know, you sort of put together an individualized program with the child that may or may not include medication. I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not in a position to say your child needs medication or doesn't need medication. Any decision about medication you should be made in conjunction with your physician, because taking a child off medication without the doctor, you know, being involved can have, you know, very negative effects, withdrawal effects. So that is something very serious, yeah. And I empathize with your situation, Michael.
Yeah, Michael, thank you very much for calling, and our best to you. In this case, Thomas Armstrong, who is a psychologist, Michael said that, you know, his son had been diagnosed with many different conditions, including depression and anxiety, along with the ADHD. Let's say a parent goes to their pediatrician, and ADHD is the sole diagnosis. What do you recommend parents do if the doctor says let's put Johnny on Ritalin or something else?
Well, I'd like to see them bring a copy of my book into the physician's office and share, well, you know, what do you think about some of these strategies? Or maybe give it to their doctor, you know, a couple of weeks before the appointment so they have a chance to look over things. There are pediatricians who are more apt to see some of these non-drug alternatives. They're called developmental behavioral pediatricians. And they look at social context as much as they look at the biological causation of things. So, you know, I've got instructions or, you know, guidelines in the book for getting in touch with a developmental behavioral pediatrician in your area. Whereas psychiatrists are going to be probably more apt to prescribe a medication. You know, back in 40, 50 years ago, they were all Freudians, and with the whole change in the biomedical revolution and the psychopharmacological revolution, that's changed dramatically. So, you know, basically, I think that you just keep saying alternatives, alternatives, alternatives. People should be aware of what the non-drug alternatives are. They should be informed. We're not saying reject everything that the ADHD people are saying. I'm saying that, you know, part of informed consent is to know different sides of the story and to be aware of as many different types of strategies. You know, I just to go down the line, I have some strategies. Use music to focus and calm. Give your child choices. Provide a balanced breakfast. That's something as simple as providing a breakfast that is not just carbohydrate, but carbohydrate with eggs or some kind of protein can make a difference in attention in terms of the child. Find your child's best time of day to be attentive and make sure your child gets enough sleep. A pharmacological conference this last weekend just came out with a report that they think that ADHD is closely intertwined with sleep disturbances, and that by, you know, if they, you know, work with the sleep problems, you know, through, you know, good sleep hygiene habits, you know, regular time to go to bed, a regular time to get up, not using bedtime as a punishment or reward, you know, making sure that there are little rituals, comforting rituals that happen before bed. These things can all make a big difference, because if you only get 3 hours of sleep and have to get up at 6:30 in the morning and get to an early class, of course you're not going to be attentive. And, you know, it's going to look like ADHD when, in fact, it might be more sleep-related.
We have news coming up next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue to take your calls with your experiences, your questions, your views for our guest, Thomas Armstrong, a psychologist who is the executive director of the American Institute for Learning and Human Development. His latest book is The Myth of the ADHD Child, 101 Ways to Improve Your Child's Behavior and Attention Span Without Drugs, Labels, or Coercion. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. When we come back, we're going to talk to, I hope she can hold on, a woman who had two children who were diagnosed with, she says, ADD. One needed medication, the other needed better education services. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back, and maybe we will talk about your situation. Maybe you have a child who has been diagnosed with ADHD. What treatment works or doesn't work for you? We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with psychologist Thomas Armstrong about his new book, the revised and updated edition of The Myth of the ADHD Child, 101 Ways to Improve Your Child's Behavior and Attention Span Without Drugs, Labels, or Coercion. Thomas Armstrong says that we are overdiagnosing ADHD, and the children who have these behaviors, which are real, are being over-medicated. And there are other ways to deal with these behaviors. We're discussing them, and we're welcoming your questions and your own experiences. Jeanette in Niagara has been waiting. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi.
Yes, tell us about your situation. You have two children who had this diagnosis?
I did. My oldest son, quite honestly, just if he was alone with adults, no other child present, he could function very well. But if there were any other children present, it would potentially get dangerous. He was very physically acting out, hitting, kicking, biting. It was very difficult to cope, and we received phone calls from school on a daily basis. We tried everything because I was a firm believer that medication should be absolutely the last possible alternative. We did diet modification, behavioral modification, set up multiple reward systems, literally banging our head against the wall, dealing with an ADHD. First it was ADD, then ADHD, then it moved to bipolar. Then they decided it was ADD with depression. Then they added anxiety. Ultimately, ended up with a diagnosis of conduct disorder. And it was very challenging, to say the least. He was very mechanically inclined, but academically, he just could not focus. Even with medication, however, I would get a phone call from school occasionally when he was placed in a closed classroom. They would say within 5 minutes of him walking on the floor, they knew whether he had ditched his medication or whether he had actually taken it, because he would occasionally decide he didn't want to take it and throw it behind the couch, things of that nature. And then our youngest son, in first grade, he could tap his toe, hum a tune, tap a pencil, and read a book, and listen to instruction, and actually take in all of the stimulus. He was reading at a high fifth grade level, and they worked this really unique idea, because he loved to learn and loved to read, that if he didn't disrupt the class, he could go to the library and do a research project. By the time he finished elementary, he had read through the library. And, of course, then once he started into junior high, things got a little more complicated. But in the school system we lived in at that time, they had a special program called the Personal Enrichment Program, where they would take him out of traditional classes 2 days a week and teach him to really think even further outside the box.
Jeanette, thank you so much. I mean, the very interesting case study, Thomas Armstrong. So one son, some changes or modifications in how he was taught in school helped a lot. He didn't need medication, but her other son apparently did.
Well, two very different kinds of kids, obviously. And with the various disorders, you mentioned hitting, biting, and kicking, and I immediately thought, well, that's not ADHD. That's more like a conduct disorder. So when you said conduct disorder, I thought, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm not saying the myth of conduct disorder, the myth of bipolar, the myth of depression. I'm talking about the myth of ADHD. So it's a little difficult for me to talk about, you know, that mm-hmm. particular child. But it is a dramatic example of where, in one situation, you can work with non-drug strategies. I thought it was great that they recognized his strengths and his passion, and they used that as a way of, you know, rewarding him for library time and, you know, really feeding that. And it sounds like he went into a gifted program. The personal enrichment is usually code for some sort of gifted and talented program, which could feed further his desire for knowledge. The other child, you say he was mechanically inclined, so it seems to me that it might be an important direction to go in terms of, you know, using the medications, but also looking at opportunities where he can use his mechanical skills, maybe at a technical school. I'm not sure how old he is, but, you know, looking ahead, one of my strategies is create or hold positive career aspirations. And I think that I've got a list of careers that are actually, you know, customized for kids who or adults who are ADHD, who need quick, you know, novelty seeking, who like to move while they're working. So a job like a firefighter, for example, or an emergency room physician, or a FedEx driver, you know, where there's a lot of different things happening, are much better careers than, you know, the absolute worst career match would be with a 9-to-5 desk job, which is unfortunately where a lot of people with ADHD diagnoses find themselves, and then they start having, you know, stress symptoms at work, and those are interpreted as being part of the ADHD instead of the fact that it's just a bad match between the job that they're in and the constellation of you know, symptoms and possibilities that they have inside.
Yeah, thank Yeah, thank you, Jeanette, for the call. Lori says, one of the hallmarks of ADHD is hyperfocus, which is what makes kids so attracted to electronics like video games or or makeup videos. It calms them down and makes them quiet, but then we don't like that either. So what about should kids be who have ADHD or attention issues not be connected to their video games and videos?
No, I've got really strategies in my book that kind of straddle both sides of the equation. On the one hand, I say kids should have their entertainment media limited to maybe 1 or 2 hours a day. I mean, kids today are spending 7 to 9 hours on electric media of all kinds. But the entertainment media, particularly the violent video games, are things that parents should seek to somehow either eliminate, cut back, or if at the very worst, sit next to the child and help them understand what it is that they're interacting with, ask them questions, and so forth. That mediation can really help. On the other hand, I do have suggestions in my book that relate to video games. There's some video games out there that have been designed to develop focus and attention. So some of those, or another thing, video games that help with working memory, which has been seen as a problem with kids with ADHD diagnosis, the inability to hold short-term information in their mind, like I'd like you to, you know, go up to your room, clean your room, then go down and take out the garbage, and you know, all that information does not stay very long in the mind of many kids with that diagnosis. So some of these video games can actually be quite effective. And I think as teaching tools also, computers and educational media can be a very good strategy for kids with the diagnosis of ADHD, because a lot of these computer programs provide immediate feedback. That's an important factor for kids labeled ADHD. They are vivid. There are sounds and colors and lights, and all that is very attractive to kids with ADHD diagnosis. And most importantly, they teach and, you know, are much preferred over the droning of the teacher lecturing and telling everybody, to look at page 246 of their worksheet, of their workbook or their textbook, and it's boring, and of course they're going to start acting out and so forth. But, you know, I think that some media is good and some media is bad, and, you know, there are a couple of organizations that I cite in the book that will help parents, you know, suss out what are the good media sources and which are the ones to avoid.
Troy in Muskego is with us. Hi, Troy.
Hello, real quick. Just want to let you know, I was diagnosed with it I was probably about 12. My parents chose not to put me on medication, and thank God. I struggled. I got kicked out of class, but by the time I got into college, I actually graduated with honors in arts program and became a teacher, as an art teacher. Now, I just want to say one thing. When this first came out when I was younger, back in the late 90s, there was a big push to get rid of arts and move everybody towards the math and science and standardized testing. And because of that, kids were not behaving. You know, sitting there doing the test, it wasn't the way I functioned either, you know. So I think that's where a lot of this came from. And then the follow-up thing is, I want to point out that we have an opioid epidemic right now. And one of there's definitely a correlation with, I have kids that I teach that, you know, especially when you teach in impoverished neighborhoods, you will find that kids are on and off medications, they lose their insurance, and these kids are literally going through withdrawals at the age of, you know, 10, 9 years old, and they're in class, and they're actually, like, drug addicts.
Troy, thank you for the call. We have less than a minute, Thomas. Maybe touch on how Troy was helped by his education in the arts.
Well, I think that the arts are a really important part of what kids with the ADHD diagnosis need. They have all this energy, and it's kind of going in all sorts of different directions. And the expressive arts, drama, music, painting, sculpture, all of those things can help direct that energy in a positive and constructive direction. So I was really glad to hear this caller really had found themselves essentially eventually by going, you know, by growing up. One last thing I just say is that some research suggests that kids with the ADHD diagnosis actually mature, their brains mature 2 to 3 years later than the typically developing person. It's normal brain development, but it just a little bit later. Some of these kids just need time to grow up. They, you know, they're timed to get to a situation where they can use their abilities and skills, and it sounds like your caller did just that.
Yeah. Thanks, Troy, and Thomas Armstrong, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Thomas Armstrong is the author of The Myth of the ADHD Child, 101 Ways to Improve Your Child's Behavior and Attention Span Without Drugs, Labels, or Coercion. Thank you to Keely Boltina for producing this hour, and thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We are going to talk about Congress coming back after its August recess, and boy, do they have a lot on their plate. We'll talk about some issues before Congress, including the new news that the DACA program could be ending unless Congress acts. This is the Ideas Network.